This Thursday and Friday, March 15th and 16th, the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra will present the music of Mahler, Kurt Weill, and ORF's Carmina Burana as part of the Moxley Carmichael Masterwork Series. The KSO will be joined by the Knoxville Choral Society in this performance led by Aram Demergen, who's joined me today. Hey, Aram.
Hey, Garrett.
So we're definitely going to spend some time talking about the ORF, but let's start with Mahler. He seems to be a composer that people love or are just a little unfamiliar with. Now, just to be clear, the work being performed isn't one of his 70 or 80 minute symphonies, right?
It is not, no. And you know, you talk about people either absolutely loving Mahler and being devoted to them, and then there are folks who see Mahler and are met with more than a little bit of trepidation, and I think that is likely because of, you know, the length. You know, you come and hear a Mahler symphony, you are usually in for about 70 to 80 minutes with no intermission.
You've got to pack a lunch.
Yes. That's more for the Wagner operas. Okay. For the Mahler symphonies, you just got to make sure you use the restroom before it starts.
Now, the piece of Mahler we're playing was originally rejected from his first symphony. Do you think there's any validation or affirmation when music like this is initially rejected but is later celebrated?
Well, I don't know if I would use the word rejected necessarily.
Okay.
When Mahler composed his first symphony as a young man, it was one of his first forays into large scale symphonic composition, and I think Mahler brings a very distinctive approach to his symphony writing in that he really comes at it, I think, from a conductor's perspective. He was somebody, he conducted the Vienna State Opera. He was already widely known for his conducting talent when he wrote his first symphony. And you can tell that it was just written from the perspective of somebody who kind of knows how an orchestra works, and just because of, the way he orchestrates it and all of the instructions that he writes in to his music. In the case of his first symphony, though, he was still a composer who was gaining experience. And so that symphony went through many, many, many drafts.
Okay.
And I guess you can say that it was rejected in that Mahler ultimately removed it.
Right.
The first symphony at one point was 5 minutes long, five movements long. And the final draft that we play today, and there's even some debate over whether that was truly Mahler's final vision of it, but the final draft that we play today is 4 movements long, and this piece, Blumine, now has a second life as a concert piece. This piece represents Mahler's, I think, more intimate and tender side. Because Mahler, we think of these big symphonies with these huge orchestras, and yes, he did write, symphonies for, 100 players, what have you. But if you listen to those symphonies, it's actually quite seldom that he uses the full force of the orchestra at once. He's very strategic in how he does that. Really, what Mahler does is he constructs smaller orchestras and smaller chamber groups within this enormous palette of instruments that he has at his disposal. So you can have moments in a Mahler symphony when there are only two people on stage playing. And in the case of Blumine, you have what is really almost a piece for solo trumpet and chamber orchestra.
I see. Well, so maybe we won't call it a rejected piece, but maybe just an early draft.
Yeah, an early draft, exactly. One of the many reasons that this piece is on the program is because it is both Blumine basically translates to flora, and so it is about nature, which takes a very prominent role in the Carmina Burana, and it is also a love song, which also takes on a very prominent role in Carmina Burana.
Yeah, for sure. So let's turn now to Kurt Weill. So full disclosure, he's one of my favorite composers, and the music from his Threepenny Opera is music I've always longed to play. So I'm personally looking forward to that for sure. Why did you program this?
I think that there is a lot about his music that people don't necessarily know that they know or don't necessarily know that they understand. I mean, first and foremost, Threepenny Opera contains a song that is among the most important popular songs of the 20th century in America, Mac the Knife.
Right.
Which when he first wrote it, was the ballad of Mackie Messer, who is a prominent antagonist in Three Penny Opera. Mm-hmm. There's this song, you know, we've heard Ella Fitzgerald sing it. We've heard, you know, we've heard Louis Armstrong sing it. We've heard Frank Sinatra sing it. I would venture that most people don't know that Kurt Weill was the person who wrote this song. And there are so many other just familiar tunes baked in to Three Penny Opera. Mostly, I just wanted to put all of this music on stage. It also, I think, presented a good opportunity, you know, especially in a conversation like this, to talk about, you know, the history of Kurt Weill. He was a composer who was a German Jew mm-hmm. who grew up in Germany and wound up leaving Germany very early in the Nazi regime. Three Penny Opera catapulted him to stardom, and then 5 years later, as he was trying to promote his next opera, The Rise and Fall of the City of Mahogany, there were Nazi demonstrations against that work, and being a German Jew, seeing the writing on the wall, he actually left for right. America, which is, you know, where he thrived, because that, you know, his music does sound very much like American jazz and is truly influenced by American jazz. But, you know, Weill's music really came to my attention when I was programming this season, you know, more than a year ago. And I was also learning a little bit about a foundation called the Orel Foundation, O-R-E-L Foundation, which champions music by composers whose music was suppressed by the Nazi regime. Mm-hmm. And it's a, you know, it's a foundation that I would encourage everybody to learn a little bit more about, because you have composers as famous as Weill and Korngold there, and then you have a number of composers who are brilliant who didn't have as much of an opportunity to get their voices heard.
Yeah. So let's ease politely into talking about Orff. So in our last chat about this month's chamber concert, we talked a little bit about music education. I'm a product of Orff Schulwerk, which is a music teaching technique that Carl Orff came up with. Do you have any experience with Orff Schulwerk or anything like that?
I do, very much, yes. Like you, I had my early classroom music lessons on Orff instruments, mm-hmm. You know, on
the metallophones,
and the xylophones, yeah. and the glockenspiels with the little letter names of the, you know, of the notes on the whatever you on the bars,
yeah.
I guess you would call them, and you know, yeah, just sort of that that discipline of just like playing a rhythm over and over again on one note and then on multiple notes. It's sort of a It's kind of beautiful in the sense that, you know, anybody that can bang two sticks together can make music. Orff's legacy certainly is Carmina Burana, but I think his larger legacy really is as an educator. And I mean, I can't even imagine the probably millions of people who have learned under this method over the years.
Right, right. All right, so let's go there.
Yeah.
Carl Orff and Carmina Burana was very popular amongst Nazis.
Yeah.
What is there to be said about that today? Can we separate the art from the artist?
You know, this is an interesting question and one that I have given a lot of thought. I think Carmina Burana is an important piece of music for a lot of reasons. The reason why it is most compelling to me is that it resonates with a lot of people just as a piece of music. Mm-hmm. I mean, this cannot be argued with. It invites a level of enthusiasm from audiences that I think few pieces of music do. And I think that's because it is highly musically approachable. It is humorous. It is dynamic. There is a range going all the way from the bombastic vitality going all the way to the very tender. And it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. There is also the uncomfortable historical fact that Carl Orff was, I'm mixing my metaphors here, but not necessarily a card-carrying member of the Nazi Party, but he was very much favored by the Nazi regime and certainly profited by it, while other composers of his time, like Kurt Weill, you know, were not able to prosper and thrive. And, you know, yes, Orff's history as a man is very checkered, and it sort of is something that is a shadow that lingers over this piece a little bit. My feeling about this whole conversation of, you know, can you separate the artist from the art? I mean, this comes up a lot when you're talking about the music of Wagner as well. Can you separate the artist from the art? I don't know. And I would not attempt to answer that question for any other individual. I think that great art deserves to be heard. Great art deserves to be heard, particularly art that resonates with people, that audiences have spoken clearly on their opinions about it and their feelings about it, and where there are problematic aspects to the composer who wrote it, it just needs to be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, and then a very important conversation.
And then the listener can decide. I think for folks that are coming to the concerts, to the Carmina Burana concerts, I think this conversation is, I don't think that one should, you know, allow it to diminish your, you know, enjoyment of the piece. I mean, but it is it's a very interesting and important fact of history to know the full story of the piece. And even within all of that, it's an enthralling piece of music.
Absolutely. And everyone is familiar with the opening and closing O Fortuna, but yeah. You know, this piece has a lot of guts in it in between that opening and closing. Do you have a favorite segment or a favorite movement?
Do I have I'm scanning all 24 movements in my head right now. You know, I like the 19th movement, which is called Si Puer Cum Puella, yeah. Which is for a cappella men's chorus. And I like this particularly because the first time I sang this piece, it was with my high school choir.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I was a singer guy. And I and my sort of 9 closest friends, we were that chamber choir.
Oh, nice.
That sang the piece. And I have very, very fond memories of us sort of hunkered down in the music room, you know, 2 days before the performance, like trying to cram and learn this piece. Just very fond memories associated with it.
Well, that sounds so much fun. Thank you so much for coming in, and we're all looking forward to this performance this week.
Looking forward to seeing everybody there. Thank you, Garrett.
The Knoxville Symphony Orchestra and the Knoxville Choral Society will perform Mahler, Weill, and Orff Thursday and Friday, March 15th and 16th at the Tennessee Theater here in downtown Knoxville. More information and tickets can be found at KnoxvilleSymphony.com.